Wonderful. So thank you for confirming that you can hear me and you can see me okay. So good afternoon again, and my name is Aphrodita Krasnichi. I'm the program officer working on the Fulbright US Scholar Program for Europe and Eurasia at the Institute of International Education based here in New York City. And with us today here, I have the pleasure to introduce the alumni of the Fulbright US Scholar Program, Dr. James Farquhar. Dr. Farquhar, would you like to introduce yourself briefly and say hi to our audience?
Sure. Yeah. I'm James Farquhar. I'm from the University of Maryland, and I was working on a Fulbright fellowship in early 2019, so it's fresh in my mind. Aphrodita, do I talk about the other stuff later?
Yes, thank you so much for your kind introduction, Dr. Farquhar. So, yes, we're so honored to have you here, and we're looking forward to hearing more about your firsthand experience, recent experience in France, as part of the Tocqueville Distinguished Chair Award in all disciplines. And we also are waiting for Dr. Lisa Bernstein to join us. She's the academic exchange specialist working for the U.S. Department of State based in Washington, D.C. And Lisa, if I have you on the call, would you like to say hi to our audience? And thanks for joining.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. It's the first time I'm using this, the GoToWebinar, so from this computer. So. Hi, I'm Lisa Bernstein. I am the program officer at the State Department for the Fulbright program with France, and I'm very glad to be able to join you on this call with Aphrodita and Dr. Farquhar.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for joining us and taking the time to spend an hour with us and share more information about the Fulbright US Scholar Program opportunities in France for the application cycle 2021-2022. So keep in mind that the application deadline for this cycle is September 15 this year. So. Before we start talking more about the awards in France, I would just like to share a little bit of information about the mission of the Fulbright US Scholar Program and also a brief history. So the Fulbright US Scholar Program runs and has a partnership with over 130 countries worldwide, but in particular, in general, the Fulbright program has a partnership with 160 countries worldwide. So it offers the opportunity for passionate and accomplished faculty, administrators, artists, journalists, independent professionals, and many others to conduct, study, teach, or research abroad. The mission of the Fulbright US Scholar Program is to foster mutual understanding between nations. So keep this in mind as you are starting to craft your application. The Fulbright program was established in 1946, and it is a United States government flagship international educational and cultural exchange program. Fulbright is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State, and it is administered here in the U.S. by the Institute of International Education, the organization that I work for, whereas overseas the program is administered by the Fulbright commissions or the U.S. embassies. So you want to check that information also, depending on, in France in particular, the Fulbright program is managed by the Fulbright commission. Keep in mind that the Fulbright offers opportunities and strives to ensure that it reflects the diversity of U.S. society and societies abroad. So we encourage the involvement of people from traditionally underrepresented groups in all of our grants, and opportunities are open to people regardless of their race, color, national origin, sex, age, religion, etc. So this is also important information. So Fulbright has grown over the years since 1946 Approximately 390,000 Fulbrighters participated in the program. And more specifically, the Fulbright Scholar Program, we send about 800 U.S. scholars and administrators abroad every year. And then we do have other amazing programs that we're going to talk about later, and because we do have the Fulbright Visiting Scholar Program, the Fulbright U.S. Student, Foreign Students, and Language Teaching Assistants. What does it take to become eligible for a Fulbright program, in particular the U.S. Scholar Program? First of all, U.S. citizenship is required. And then depending on the award, because we do have like diverse awards in France, PhD is required or terminal degree in many cases, then we do have opportunities for professionals or independent professionals and artists. And also, depending on the award, teaching experience requirements are different. Keep in mind for the returning Fulbrighters, you have to wait 2 years from the time you completed your last Fulbright in order to be eligible for another Fulbright. And now I would like to just speak briefly about the France Award description. And we do have, I would like to speak about the overview of the France Awards, because we do have, like if you run a general search on our catalog of awards for France, you'll see that there are 11 awards offered for 21-22 cycle. And these awards are offered in teaching, combination of teaching and research, or research only. We do have an opportunity to do 1 week and a half seminar for international education administrators in France. So there are like 12 grants that they give just for this. I would definitely encourage you to review all of these awards and to try to identify which one would be a good match for your background, interest, and expertise. So I'm going to show you later, if we have some time, I'm going to show you the website and how to find these awards. But here is a snapshot of all 11 awards that are offered in France. So we do have also the award that I highlighted here, just a snapshot on how the awards look like. Basically, the Fulbright Chakwe Distinguished Chair Award in all disciplines, and every award would have the same formatting. There are four tabs for every award, and you make sure you want to look for every one of these tabs because there are useful information provided there. And first tab here, as an example, is the grant activity. Then you want to look for the grant length. So you want to match your project, your teaching or research according to the dates that are set for this, for each of these grants, each of these awards, and then the location. Usually when they're open to any institution of higher education, you want to make sure that those are accredited institutions, and when you're not sure, you can always check with us. And then the discipline types, if it's an open-ended award, and if they have any special features. So I just wanted to highlight here, and this is something new we're having this year, on the right-hand corner on the bottom, you will see join an office hour button. And you can register every Monday. We're hosting Europe and Eurasia office hour from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern time. And you can just register. And this is more like a casual discussion between me and applicants. And I'm there to help you answer any questions you might have. So just wanted to point that out to you. But, you know, if you have any, like, more urgent questions, you can always write to me, europeeurasia@iie.org. So, Lisa, I don't know if you would like to talk about the specific regional awards in France, and I can do that, of course, but I just wanted to see if maybe you would be interested to just tell us more about the Grand Est Regional Award in France.
Yes, that would be fine. I wanted to note that the regional awards, particularly the Grand Est, and then you'll see the Hauts-de-France. These are awards that are in special partnership. The Fulbright Commission in Paris has gone out to the regions and made these agreements so that the regional governments are really supporting the grants. They're helping fund them, and they're very interested in having Americans come to their universities and their institutions, research institutions. So it's also a way of getting people out of just going to Paris, the capital, and, you know, the south, where sometimes people will go. So you'll be, you know, it's really, it's, you know, similar to when people come to the U.S., they always think of maybe, you know, New York or the West Coast, but trying to get people into these regions where there are really excellent universities, but also centers set up where the universities and the research centers together are working together. So we really do encourage you, if you can find a counterpart in one of these regions. And so for the Grand Est, I'm just checking on the flyers that I have, because there are some specialties. They're open. It's open. This region is open to all disciplines. They do have some specialties that they are looking for particularly, but really they will look at all different ones. So I'm just checking for the Grand Est. For instance, the universities include the cities and universities are, for instance, Strasbourg or Mulhouse, where also we also place English teaching assistants, so we have a lot of support in that city. Rennes, Metz, Nancy, Troyes, and Chalon en Champagne, and those are the cities that are specifically there in the Grand Est. It's open for all levels of scholar that have a PhD or other terminal degree. And then the areas of specialization that they're looking for instance, science and technology, life sciences and health, all of the social sciences and humanities, but especially they have a focus on the bioeconomy, health, energy transition, and the environment, and also artificial intelligence. So those are some specific areas for the Grand Est award.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for this introduction about the Grand Est award. And moving further to the other regional awards in France, and if you'd like to continue to tell us more about the Hauts de France Regional Award and also the Hauts de France Regional Award for Junior Research.
Yes, so similar to the Grand Est, the Hauts de France is the region. It's also a region that's close, to Belgium. It has Lille as its main city, but also some other cities, Amiens, Lens, Douai, and Valenciennes. And again, you can be in any of the either hard sciences, humanities, social sciences. But here there are some specializations, for instance, working on planet health and intelligence issues. They are very well known for multidisciplinary projects and areas. For instance, in some cross-cutting fields as biology and health, food and bioeconomy. They are very well known for physics, chemistry, and material sciences, and mathematics and computer sciences, energy, and what is called the third industrial revolution, which is climate and energy transition, transport, such as railways, new kinds of technologies, digital, image, and cognitive science. And the region is particularly known because it's working on the smart specialization strategy, so smart cities and that type of innovation. So there's the regular regional award, and then there's a specific award for junior research, which is sort of postdoctoral level. The region is really, it's looked at as the golden triangle of London, Paris, and Brussels. And the regions in France were condensed and merged a few years back. So this used to be called Nord-Pas-de-Calais and the Picardy region, so it's a larger region. But it does have a very good tradition in research. For instance, Louis Pasteur, who was one of the first dean of the Faculty of Sciences in Lille, and it's, again, the region is committed to this third industrial revolution, which includes the circular economy, energy, smart cities, and additive manufacturing. So you can see they have a lot going on with technology. And also a nice thing about these regions are they have awards for incoming French scholars also. So if you do get a grant in one of these regions, you'll have a good cohort of French scholars who have been to the U.S. on the Fulbright as well. So it really is, we're really trying to build collaborations and build the capacity in these regions. And so you could really have a great impact.
That's great. Very valuable information. And the next regional award, the third one, is Nouvelle Aquitaine Regional Award. So, Lisa, we really appreciate your time. And if you can tell us more about this other amazing award, which is in the largest administrative region in France.
Yes. And so Nouvelle Aquitaine, which is in the far west or the west of France, is also one of the is a very well-known region for instance, because Bordeaux is one of the main cities, and I'm just checking on the specialties for that region. Hold on one second.
It's the wine region.
It is the wine region, yes. It is definitely the wine region. I'm just seeing if I have that on my list of... one second. Which specialties they're looking for. But...
So yeah, they're looking, like this is again, it's 3 to 9 months of research offered in Nouvelle Aquitaine universities, and these are like in Bordeaux, Poitiers, Limoges, Pau, and La Rochelle. So these are like the 6 universities, and they are welcoming applications in all fields, preferably in some of the, especially like strong fields if you have a background in analytical chemistry, materials chemistry, green sustainable chemistry, subsoil energy, optic lasers, health sciences, environmental sciences. So these are just even including archaeology, economics and management, material physics, and aeronautics. So you want to see like they're really heavily focused on the STEM field. So that is something that you want to consider, these regions. So moving further to the other award, the All Discipline Award, which is an open-ended award. And Lisa, if you want to say something in particular, I put down like the bullet points about the All Discipline Award, which is literally like applicants can propose to do the combination of teaching and research or research only for 3 to 6 months in any discipline.
Yes, and even for the all disciplines, again, usually we do try to get a wide range. So that includes all of the humanities fields as well as the arts and performing arts, but also and the social sciences, and then the hard sciences. And you might know that, so France, under President Macron, he has the Making the Planet Great Again initiative, which focuses a lot on sustainable energy and climate change and projects that would address some of those kind of global issues, especially in the sciences and cross-disciplinary projects that, say, look at the science, but also linked with humanities and social sciences in ways of actually reworking cities and reworking our society using science. So those kind of projects are really things that they look at, the interdisciplinary and very things that are really relevant to issues going on today. So I would say that the more you can tie in the project that you're doing, the teaching and or research that you're doing with specific questions and problems that society is facing today, I think that the commission selection committee really looks at those very carefully.
Thank you, Lisa, for sharing those. That's really important information. Moving forward, we discussed like how we have diverse awards in France, and this is another postdoc opportunity. Lisa, if you want to say something about this award.
Yes, so the RUSS is for all types of social sciences. So you can see the specializations. They have subject matter that sort of crosses humanities and social sciences. So you can see American history, American studies, area studies, and those could be particular branches. For instance, African American studies or American Indian studies, and then also anthropology. And then the traditional social sciences such as psychology, sociology, also economics and history. And then they also actually have linguistics and mathematics in there. And the RUSS is a really good international institution. There's the one grant that's through Fulbright, which is in partnership with this institution, but the RUSS itself gets, probably, I don't know, between 50 and 100 maybe applications for other U.S. grantees to come on its own anyway. So it's a very international host university for all people. So it would really be an international experience as well, and you'd really get a lot of international collaboration through that. It's a junior research, more of a postdoctoral position. So that's a good.
Thank you, Lisa. And in the interest of time, because this is like valuable information, I know that they offer also a lot of information on our website about more details about these awards. But we just wanted to highlight like the other awards that we have in France, so that you have a better understanding of these other amazing awards. And briefly, we can just mention the Fulbright Sergi Paris University Award, which is 4 to 10 months research or a combination of teaching and research, and then this is a multidisciplinary approach to the major scientific, social, and political issues of the 21st century. But then there are like some other STEM fields that they are looking applications in as well. And Lisa, feel free if you want to add anything in particular. But in the interest of time, because we really want to hear also from Dr. Farquhar and his experience, and then we want to take the questions. We want to leave some time for the questions as well.
Sure, sure. I think you can see what their specialties are there on the website.
Yes, wonderful. So, and then another very unique award that they have is the Fulbright Imra IE Marseille University Chair in Migration Studies. So you can explore more. And we'll send you a follow-up message with the PowerPoint presentation and the recording of this webinar, so you'll be able to look at these awards. And also, these are all hyperlink awards, so you'll be able to check them out. And then the other important award in French studies that is listed here, the Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences. So you want to explore this, and French language is required for this particular award. So you want to, you know, for those that speak the language, this is a great opportunity, and if you're in these disciplines. We do have also the International Education Administration Program, the IEA seminar that is, they offer 12 grants to U.S. international education professionals and senior higher education officials. So this is 1 week and a half in France, it's in Paris, and one other region in France, which is to be determined. So if you are involved with a study abroad or you work as an international education professional, this is a great opportunity. Now, I would like to give the floor to our Fulbright alum, Dr. James Farquhar, who I'm so excited to hear more about his firsthand recent experience in France. So, Dr. Farquhar, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I thought I would just share my thoughts on the process that I went through with the application, some of the decisions I made along the way in deciding to apply, and then also some information, insight that may be relevant, it's certainly relevant in some cases, that I obtained from sitting on a Fulbright review panel in France. So I reviewed grants of people leaving France and coming to the U.S. And then afterwards with questions and anything else, I'm happy to discuss any aspect of the fellowship and my time in France. I'm also happy to field email questions if people want to look me up and send me something. So I thought what I would do would be to start with what the application process was like for me. Now, my deadline was a little earlier. It was August 1st, and I learned about the program and the various programs from attending a presentation like this one, and then also from talking with a colleague about it, because he was actually on a Fulbright in France at the time. One of the things that I did hear, and it became an issue for me, was trying to make sure that I got everything in on time, and this meant the proposal, which is pretty straightforward because I'm in control of that, but also the letters of invitation, and in my case it had to be from someone who was like the president of the university, documentation of language, my reference letters, all of them had to be in on the deadline. And I sat in an airport in France sending text messages and emails because there was a question about time zones that got mixed up, and they got in on time. But it was something that did require paying attention to. It also, what I did was, since I was applying in August, I was starting about this time in June, and I contacted my letter writers and the person writing the letter of invitation to make arrangements for these, and also to make a plan to talk to them about the research and then send them a draft in early July, which at the time I didn't realize it was going to be important, but I think from looking and sitting on the panel, I think actually that was something that could have been important, because the letter of invitation and the letters, if they're speaking about the connections between the applicant and the institution and the mutual benefits, they're much more compelling. And I'd like to think that that's what they spoke about in my case, but I didn't read any of them, obviously. At the time I was applying, I happened to be living in France. I was visiting for a few months. I was visiting a lab in France that had some equipment. I'm a scientist that we don't have. And they're actually my chief competitors, but they've also turned into my chief collaborators and coordinators. When we don't collaborate, we coordinate our work. My decision, I ended up choosing to apply for the chair position, which involved teaching and research. And there, I chose it simply because I thought that the amount of funding would make a difference in my ability to support the visit. I had previously undertaken research, not on a Fulbright, but as an outgoing researcher, and found that the research environment when you're away from the country is really just fantastic. You learn new things about yourself. And I knew that was something that I wanted to do. However, I had not, this involved both teaching and research, and I'd not done that. I was very happy to do that now that I've done it, because I learned a lot in the process. But it is a different type of commitment, and it made it so that I was, when I was there, I was working on teaching, on giving talks and things like that, instead of being completely free with the research. It did also let me work with students and postdocs, but what it really meant was when I was writing the proposal, I had to write a proposal that talked about research, and it talked about the teaching, and probably in the opposite order, and then it talked about the broader benefits related to me and the institution. And being able to talk with people there actually was helpful, and it was helpful particularly in making plans and understanding the structure of how the teaching would work. If you're doing research, I assume that also matters, because you can understand how the research would work. And I was doing that as well while I was there. Other than that, the process of putting the proposal was pretty standard. It's like any other application or proposal that you put together. But it did involve this issue of trying to keep track of the various letter writers and making sure that the letters and the proposal went in by the deadline. I think that's it with the proposal process for me. I'm happy to talk more about that. But I wanted to say a little bit more about what I learned from my experience on this review panel for the Fulbright France side, because I having the role flipped where I was doing the evaluation and seeing what was being being proposed and seeing the disciplines made me realize that the application that I would put together now, if I were doing it again, would probably be different than the one that I put together at the time. The range of topics that we were given in the proposals to review were mind-boggling, and I read all the proposals that were across all the different regions in France. But for a scientist, I'm reading proposals from philosophers, historians, doctors who are studying viruses, engineers, musicians, city planners, and then scientists, which I'm fairly in the comfort zone. I understand the language. Across the board, the quality was really high, and the projects were really interesting. The things that made a difference for me, and I wasn't evaluating those proposals necessarily outside my area of expertise, outside the sciences, but was that it was a benefit for the proposal if everything was explained in a way that showed that the proposal and the discipline and the parties involved, both the proposer and the institution and the hosts, derived some sort of benefit, and especially if it seemed like there would be a longer-term connection that they could develop out of that. It was also critical that this, it turned out the invitation letters dealt with that, and so there was sort of a coherence between the invitation letters, even sometimes the reference letters, that were saying, look, this person going to this area is a benefit for them, but it's also a benefit for these people or for us. And because we're dealing with things that are really pretty high level, I realize that a lot of us and a lot of proposals that we read, we get caught up in our own language. And so I actually spent a long time trying to look up the words used by the philosophers and then finally understood and then realized how significant the research was. But I also saw other readers who'd get frustrated by words and phrases and jargon and acronyms that were used, sometimes by people within their own discipline. And so the proposals that were most accessible were the ones that you could understand. When they used an acronym, if they did, they basically defined it and bolded it so that people could find it. They used key figures. They used really pretty clever formatting. And everything that was explained made it so it was easier to evaluate and then to see what the benefits were. And there is a, there will be a range of caliber, but they are, again, all really high caliber. And so the research content is not usually the question. I mean, it's part of the question, but it's whether the person who's reading it really understood and whether it meets the goals and can produce something. So in doing that, in putting it together, these are all pretty obvious things that I've been told over and over again, but I think they're always worth reminding ourselves. The other thing I saw with the outgoing, and I just saw this in this presentation, was that there are different program areas in different parts of France, and some of the areas are supported by specific other institutions. If that fits in your area of interest and is the place that you want to go, that can be an advantage. That can help. It doesn't mean you shouldn't try for the other places. I actually applied to work in Paris and then worked in France outside of the Fulbright in another area of France, in central France. And I realized afterwards that, you know, that they need people who cover all of France, so that is critically important. So I'm going to stop there. I hope that my comments about my process of putting together the application were useful, and I hope the same thing about my inferences about what the review process was like for me and what I saw. And again, I'm happy to respond to email. And it could be now, or it could be even just before you head over to talk about experiences and things like that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Farquhar, for sharing your experience. And I'm sure this is so useful for applicants because they do ask us many times, you know, about these questions that you already addressed. And then we really appreciate that, your time and commitment to the Fulbright program. So moving further, I just want to discuss about the application component. So we discussed the awards, we discussed the experience from our alumni in France, but now that you know that information, basically you want to start your application, and it is important to start it as soon as possible, because once you do, you become part of our network, and this application, online application, is pretty user-friendly. It's intuitive, and you start filling it out, and then you will have also application instructions that we provide so that it's like a checklist from A to Z what you need to do. So just to highlight here the major components of the application, the project statement, the resume, and then this year this is something new that only two letters are required, two letters of recommendation are required. And then for that one award where language is required, you are required to submit a language proficiency report. And then the letter of invitation. So for applicants who apply in other in these specific disciplines listed here, we do want to see a portfolio. So for artists, architects, journalists, writers, etc. But then for all the other applicants who apply in teaching, we want to see a sample of the syllabi. And then if you apply for research, we want to see a bibliography, which is a list of resources that you are going to use as part of this research. Just to give you more information about the project statement, which is the crucial component of the application, basically this is where you outline, you know, why Fulbright, why you, why this country, why France. So keep in mind you can apply to only one award and in France, and in general you can apply to only one country and one award in particular, and unless you apply for like the Schumann Awards or other multi-country awards that we offer in Europe. But what you need to lay out in the project statement, basically you describe your proposed project, which is 3 to 5 pages long. you focus on what you plan to do and what courses you plan to teach, and then they want to hear more about your teaching philosophy, and then that's why you were going to provide in addition the syllabi. And then what is the impact that you will have on your hosts and also in the long run on your home institution? So they really want to see this in your application. In addition, we have something new this year, the supplemental questions, where you will address why Fulbright, how you're going to serve as cultural ambassador in France, and why did you choose France? It has to have a rationale to why France. And then how adaptable are you in working with other cultures? They also want to see that in your application, and how are you going to adapt your materials to accommodate the needs of the hosting institution, the hosting culture. So, and what's important to highlight here also that we do have this other network that you can join, myfulbright@cis.org, another way to stay in touch with us without starting your online application is where we send reminders, updates on webinars, tips on how to put together a strong proposal, etc. But if you have any follow-up questions and if we are not able to answer your question today, you can always write to us, email us, europeeurasia@iae.org, and also you can visit our website to learn more about these awards that we just mentioned here. There is another possibility: if you have a colleague that was not able to join, you can refer them. We do have a referral process, and then follow us on social media to learn more about the updates on the Fulbright program and what's happening. In many cases, we share stories from alumni, photos, etc. So we are active on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So now I would like to start answering some of your questions. And this is one of the most common questions that we receive, which is about the invitation letter. So what is the process of requesting an invitation letter and reference letter? So I can speak about the technical side, but I would like to invite Dr. Farquhar to share with us. I know he mentioned briefly about his experience, but if you want to share with us, in particular because Dr. Farquhar, attended the Distinguished Tocqueville Chair Award, and they have a different process of requesting a letter of invitation, but in general, once you identify the host institution that you're going to work with, you want to send them an email, introduce yourself, send your resume, summarize project idea of what you're planning to accomplish as part of your Fulbright application. And then if there is an interest from their side, you will get a response from them, and then a follow-up email should be requesting the letter of invitation, which they will email it to you, and then you can include it into your application. As far as reference letters are concerned, there is a whole process that you just register them. You put in their email and names, and then the letter, the email will be sent to these recommenders directly from the system, and then they will be able to upload the recommendation letters. But you know, you want to be proactive about this as well, the same as with the invitation letter. You want to share with your recommenders your summary of your project idea as part of the Fulbright so that they have a better idea on what to focus their recommendations. So I would like to invite Dr. Farquhar just to tell us, like, how was the process for you when you initiated the invitation letter?
Okay, so the invitation letter, I guess in my case, I needed to get an invitation letter from the president of the institution, and I did that actually by making contact with the person who would host me, and then working from him up through the system, and it would effectively been his department, but he was the head of it at the time, to the person who was required to write the letter, and they requested a whole bunch of information from me about the proposal, and really sort of took it seriously. because I know they were asking for information and trying to work together. I think that probably really depends on the person who's in charge and writing the letter, but my guess is they will be talking with the person and the group that you're going to be working with. For the reference letters, I think what I always want to have is a reference letter, or if I'm reading one that's believable and someone who knows the discipline and knows where the work fits in the discipline and how it fits not only for the person but for the place where they're going. And that's also where getting the information about the proposal ahead of time can help them. The other thing is, if they're as high profile as possible, that sometimes carries a little bit of weight, because people then say, oh, I know this person because they're famous and they don't have any real stake in the game. If they are going to say something bad or lukewarm, they'll say it. And so if they're positive, then that helps. I don't know. Hopefully that answers the questions. If are there,
yes,
other things that you have in mind?
Yes, that's perfect. Yeah, especially this year, since we have only two letters of recommendations required. When you applied, there were three letters required. So like you mentioned, the first letter should come from your home institution. It must come from your home institution, and the second letter can come from a person outside your home institution. I just want to share with you, Dr. Farkor, that I have a comment rather than a question about your presentation, that your comments and insights were very useful and informative. So I just wanted to share this with you from one of the applicants. So, all right. Basically, we have another question about the portfolio, the supplemental materials. How would they be submitted for dance, if you apply for dance? So basically, there is like a description for every specific arts medium, how you're going to, whether it's video or it's audio or it's images. So there are instructions, clear instructions on our website, like how large should this video be, the formatting, and what kind of applications are accepted. So I'm going to share with you also as a follow-up all these resources on how, where to find them on our website, so that you are able to get this these instructions. Great. So another comment from another applicant. It was really helpful to hear Dr. Farkor's presentation. One question: what are the expectations regarding teaching if one is doing teaching and research in France? So is it more for graduate, undergraduate, language? How would one get to learn a bit more about the culture and context of university teaching in France so that one goes in better prepared to deliver the course or the seminar?
Okay, so I spoke with the colleague who was hosting me, and this, that we had a fair amount of back and forth, because the institution that I went to work for was primarily, they granted PhD degrees, but really nothing else. And then they taught, all of the universities around Paris would come to their courses. So I had to find out what was the nature of the teaching that was done and tailor something to them. And actually, as it turned out, I had a preconceived notion about what the teaching was like that was heavily influenced by some very, very talented French people who I had met before, who always debated and were actively involved. But these were all people who had just had to finish their PhD. And so I wrote about how I wanted to work with these people. When I got there, I actually found I had to adjust and change, because the starting graduate students are different than the ones who are finishing. I imagine the readers probably knew that when they saw what I had written. But I think they looked at the content, they looked at what was going to be there and how it matched. And how I decided it was by talking with the people there. The stipulation that I had was related to a certain number of hours, and I was taking those hours really quite literally, and the people that were there said, look, this is how the math should work and so forth, And so we stuck with what their system said. But it was very fulfilling and an interesting process to go through. I imagine it's different at every institution that one goes to, but it will depend upon what they're doing there.
Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Farquhar. Yeah, again, it depends on the host institution, but in general, the experience has been with most of the applicants that when you reach out to them and then there is an interest, they're enthusiastic about hosting you, then they would reply with an interest and then, you know, following up with a letter of invitation. So you want to make sure you start that process now. And then we do have also the Fulbright Scholar Directory. This is the list of alumni on our homepage where you can look up alumni to friends and just get a better idea where what institutions they affiliated with, so that you know, it gives you an idea for your a better idea who to reach out to and what institutions they have worked in the past with. So another question, and we have about 7 more minutes to answer your great questions. Another question we have about, I speak fluent French but have never had to submit a proficiency report. So basically, you can just register a language instructor or a professor of French that speaks French, so there is not like a formal process, but still you have to register them. It's not like a test, but they would interview you, and then they would fill out this form. It's basically just like another recommendation letter. It's confidential. You won't be able to see it, but this is the language proficiency report. So after interviewing you, the language instructor or the teacher of French will give us the this proficiency report, and then we'll be able to see that if the language is required. So, and then another question we have, does the letter of invitation have to come from president of the university? So that was just like Dr. Farquhar's case, because that the Tocqueville Distinguished Chair Award, that's a special process to get the letter of invitation where the institution will have to issue the letter and submit it on your behalf. But for other awards, basically you want to get the letter of invitation from the person you are collaborating with, as long as they have the authority to invite you. And the letter of invitation should come on the university letterhead, signed or stamped. In Europe, sometimes they stamp them, and then just scan it, and then they can email it to you. Then you'll attach it to your application.
Could I add a little?
Sure, please. Go ahead.
So on the letters that were coming for the people coming to the U.S., I think that I would have been much more comfortable having someone from the lab or the unit that I was working with write a letter of invitation, because they can speak authoritatively about what the contributions are. So I would emphasize, if you have that option, go for the person who can speak the most about what the benefits are, and then obviously the higher in the system, so that they're speaking for the institution. And sometimes there were two letters or a jointly written letter that I saw in some of the things. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Farquhar. So moving to the next question, basically, we do have another question about the letters of recommendation. Can I submit 3 letters of recommendation? Actually, the system will only allow you to submit 2 letters. So make sure one comes from your home institution and the second is from a person outside your home institution. So the system will not allow you. And this was a way for us to make it easier for applicants, because it is quite a process to, you know, to get 3 letters of recommendation. So we just wanted to simplify it and accommodate you, because we noticed that when applicants submitted last year, majority of them had just 2 letters of recommendation. So, this was just to make it easier for you. All right, so another question for Dr. Farquhar. What experiences led you to choose to apply to this award that you did?
I chose the institution because of the instrumentation and because of the people, actually the people who were there first. And then France, because that was where they were and where I thought that we could be. For this particular award, I chose it actually based upon a decision I made looking at the cost of living and looking at what would make the most benefit. So I just decided to try for it and see if it would work. It was a gamble, but it was not anything more than that. In the process of putting together the award, I did think, okay, I would like to try to do the teaching and work with these students. And so there was that motivation as well.
Great. Thank you. So we have a few more questions, and we have like 2 more minutes. But Lisa, if you want to add anything before we try to answer 2 more questions, feel free to add anything if you want to share. All right. So moving on to other questions. Is it an advantage to have a letter in French? Well, as long as you provide translation, that's fine. So the letters of invitation should be written in English, because remember, the reviewers here in the U.S., they will be your peers, they will be Americans who are going to do the first review process. So make sure that you also provide English translation. So we do have another question for Dr. Farquhar. Fulbright program impact is already established, but as in any setting, some things usually don't work. There are challenges. What challenges did you encounter when you applied for the Fulbright Tocqueville Distinguished Chair, or any challenges you have encountered? So I'm not sure this is quite clear question.
That's fine. I did not, for the application itself, the challenge for me actually was dealing with the July-August holiday and trying to make sure that everything made it through with the letters that I needed at that time. And once we arrived there, the biggest challenge, and it wasn't for me, but it was for my wife, was figuring out how to get the carte de séjour. I'd been through, had the same thing happen with my parents. It became very, very complicated, and you just had to kind of work with the system and let the people help. But we ended up moving cities, and it got very, very complicated as a result of that. But that's something that the Fulbright France will help with, give advice with, but they don't have control over.
Yeah, that's the Fulbright Commission, right, you mentioned.
Yes.
They helped you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, they helped, but this required us.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thanks for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Aphrodite, it took me a little while to figure out how to do the mute and unmute, but I just wanted to, sorry.
I
did want to thank you, Dr. Farquhar, for this very, detailed information that I think is really helpful. And I did want to just note that, the Fulbright Commission staff in France, it's a very small staff, but they're very committed and really do want to help as much as possible. So even if they can't always, they might not always have the answers or be able to do what is needed as far as the visas, the residence permits, because of just whatever the, regulations are. But you should definitely feel free to reach out to them, and they'll do what they can. And then all of us here, both at IIE and at the State Department, we're happy to work on any issues that might come up. And I know for this coming year especially, it is going to be somewhat challenging, because we just don't know yet what the status will be both in France and in the U.S. You know, right now things are opening up in France quite a bit, and hopefully they will continue, but we just have to be able to be flexible, and we're really trying to work with you the best we can as the situation changes. So please do note that things are a little different coming up for this year, and do know that we are trying to work in your best interests.
Thank you so much, Lisa, for sharing that information. Also, just like Lisa mentioned, you can always email us, join the office hours every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. And don't worry, I'll send you a follow-up message how to join. I'll make sure that you have these resources that we just went through. And so nice to have you join us today, Dr. Farquhar, and also Lisa. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you to all the applicants interested to pursue an application for the Fulbright Youth Scholar Program in France for 21-22 cycle. Let us know if you have any other questions moving forward. Stay safe and have a wonderful rest of the day and a great weekend. Bye for now.